fittingly enough, we're in Amoeba Records.
Yes.
A great place to be and a great place to talk about a new release of your record.
Yeah, where selling records is still a big deal.
We're in the Mecca, my friend.
Yeah.
I have to ask this question, you know, having obviously followed the arc of Dawes since the inception. At this point, as a songwriter, I imagine it would seem to me that so often with your eye for detail, it would seem like any given thought in a day might provoke the idea of, could this be a song? Do you write with that sense of frequency, or how does it work?
I mean, it's funny how like that light goes off for different things. Like, I'll hear something and be like, that's a song. Or someone will say a sentence and I'll be like, that's a song. And it's not like, you know, you hear these stories of like people not being able to stop talking about what they do for a living because that part of their brain is always on. Like, that's definitely true, but it's not like it stops me up. It's just it occurs to me, and then if it's still kind of bugging me later in the day, I'll sit down with it. Like, I was listening to a podcast the other day about Sandy Hook and about Alex Jones and about how like him continuing to perpetuate these false claims of how that was a hoax, and it was so upsetting. And then there was this, and you know, not to be insensitive, because I think it was a moving thing, and I was actually crying in the car, but it was the journalist was saying that she had spoken to this father, and the father was giving the details of their last morning together. He's like, these were details that I expected to keep, because they meant something specific to me, and that wasn't meant to be shared with the world. But the way that they were talked about, like, you know, he was going through a growth spurt, so his pants were a little short, and we went to the diner and he didn't order bacon because he choked on it a few days ago and he ordered sausage instead. I was just like sobbing, but I was also, and maybe this is a weird example because I don't know if writing that song would necessarily be, I don't know. That might be a little too much. But I thought to myself, like, that's a song. Like, that's, and in a way, like, and I don't mean that's a song to be, that's something to mine out and become a song.
I was like,
that's already a song.
Right.
Like I'm responding to that right now in this podcast of someone quoting a conversation with someone else as if I were hearing Leonard Cohen sing it. And that emotional response was completely identical. So when I say that's a song, it's not like I can do something with this. I can run with this and take advantage of someone's truth. I don't want to do that. It's more like it hits home, and it's like that's already music. That's a song.
Now, with that having been said, the larger question then becomes, at this stage of the band's evolution, you know, songwriting. And, you know, you obviously have been recognized as one of the greatest songwriters of our time. By the way, in case you haven't heard that before, I have it on good authority. What inspires and then ultimately motivates you guys to say, all right, it's album time. Album time.
Right, right. I mean, we've been so lucky that with each record, by the time there's between 12 and 17 songs, we're like, okay, let's start talking about what we're gonna do, and let's start like making a plan, and it's lined up within 12 to 18 months, like every time. And there's always a little leftovers from the one before it, and then we just kind of write on top of that. And oftentimes, like, you know, I'll write songs, like even for this record, I had a song called what was it called? It was like called like less like a switch, more like a fader. And I was like, that's cool, but it's not the first song of the batch. And then I had a song called Customers. I'm like, that's cool, but it's not the first song of the batch. And then I wrote Crack the Case. And I was like, okay, now like there's going to be an album. And now this is going to lead me into these other songs. And then I wrote Time Flies Either Way. And then and they all just kind of fell into place. And that's what's always been the case for me. Like the first song of a record tells me which one it is. And there might even be songs written before it, but I just know like the gun hasn't been fired into the air yet. You know, it's like I'm not off to the races quite yet. Like when I wrote From a Window Seat in 2012, I guess, I was like, okay, this is the first song that I have. And it's cool because that leads you to like the next thing. It's like when I wrote From a Window Seat, I was like, this is weird, and I don't know, I don't know what this means. I don't know if I'm going to like what I'm about to do, but I know that this is going to dictate it.
And I have related to the attention to the detail in that song in crazy fashion. And look, we're going to talk about your attention to detail with the few words which I hear shouted out in every Dawes performance. Another chicken wing.
Yeah, yeah.
Suddenly, the lexicon, yeah. It's like that has become a rallying cry of all Dawes fans. The album does reference Passwords being the title. It does talk about, I guess, inevitably,
yeah,
the way technology has been both informing and somewhat shaping our lives. If there is a recurring theme that's touched upon, yeah, that seems to be one.
Yeah. And yeah, there's a lot of kind of like there is that back and forth. A song like Feed the Fire, where it's like I want to reach for the brass ring, I want to play in front of a million people, but I also want to know where that desire is coming from. And more times than not, when I'd like trace it back, I'm like, this is coming from a dark place. This is coming from a place where I don't feel good enough, or where one doesn't feel good enough or valuable enough.
It's never enough.
And so the idea of like, I'm going to, and then this false like idea that well, once I do it, like, sure, maybe it's unhealthy, but once I do it, then I'll have scratched the itch and I'll be able to move on and I'll be okay. Finally, I'll be able to accept myself. Like, once I make that, like that extra $100, or once I, you know, once I collect that final vinyl of that, you know, it's like, oh, there's these things that we tell ourselves to, like, that then I'll be okay. And then you do it, and then it's not true. And then all of a sudden, like, you need 10 where you needed one. And that's what that song's dealing with, of like, well, I want to make records, I want to be on stage, but I also want it to be coming from a place that I feel like is like spiritually edifying. And I know that sounds kind of ridiculous, but I also feel like I didn't sign up to be an artist to like spin out into some feedback loop of my bassist instincts, you know, like it wasn't about
hookers and blow. Yeah. What?
Well, it's
what's
funny,
going on see, with this
I,
business?
You see so many amazing writers and guys that I often return to, so I'm not criticizing it, but it seems like they get to a place where like them continuing to mine their paranoia and them to continue to mine their self-obsession is what brings people to the party. And they are doing that. And all of a sudden they're 20, 30, 40 years into a career, and they're like, they don't seem like that spiritual quest that is making art led them to anything that was more of a healthier outlook. And again, I realize I probably sound like a school mom a little bit, but it's important to me that like, if I'm going to do this, it's going to make me a better person by my own standards, whatever that means.
What's up?
Aggressive symptom of this collective phantom pain. And the more that you ignore it, the more it makes you feel insane. Just look around. It's the battle of the passwords. It's the trumpets on the hill. It's that constant paranoia. It's the final fire drill. And if you won't sing the anthem, they'll go find someone else who will. They're cracking down. looking over shoulders, not knowing what I'm looking for. Now that the feeling someone's watching isn't just a feeling anymore. Now that both sides of the aisle are this good at keeping score, we've crossed a line. But there's a madness to the method. There's a market for the fear. It's that dance out on the razor's edge, a wolf held by the ears. It's the man behind the curtain. It's the way of all frontiers since the dawn of time.
I wonder, do you start to question how much of a first-person approach is going to be misinterpreted as, oh, he must be writing about...
Yeah.
Is that entered into the sensitivity?
Totally. Like, I mean, even in that song I mentioned, Feed the Fire, there's a lyric where it's working for attention, I'll eventually resent. And then trying to ignore some of the darker implications of smiling for the camera with my hands in wet cement. But that first part, the working for attention, I'll eventually resent. I'm never going to resent a Dawes fan. Like, I feel I owe them everything. I'm not coming from, if someone were to hear that and think like, oh gosh, how dare he like say that, like, he doesn't want us to like take our picture. He doesn't want to take his picture with us and stuff. That's not where it's coming from. It's coming from a first person because it's something that I think is a worthy question, but it's not coming from a personal experience necessarily. I mean, it's trying to adopt more of like a satirical like perspective of like, yes, I am in a position where I have to find out where the line is between what I'm comfortable with and what I'm not in terms of me seeking success, whatever that means. But that doesn't mean that every lyric in that song is me. It's just a means for me to explore this question further.
When not necessarily deploying third person versus first person, it sounds, again,
yeah,
now that I'm just the guy who listens to your songs, there are songs that due to the real craft of your songwriting and the real lyrical attention that you provide, you can't help but feel like, oh man, he must be,
yeah,
or conversely, he knows how I feel.
Yeah, yeah.
There's two sides of that coin. I know how he feels. I right. know what he's writing yeah. about. And then there's, how does he know what I'm feeling right now?
And that's like always the goal. I mean, the funny thing is like sometimes the like songs that are more
character driven.
Yeah, anecdotal. Like that is just because I haven't experienced anything in a song like Telescope or A Little Bit of Everything. That doesn't mean that that's not very representative of like how I feel or how I think. It's not like that's what I think when I start writing it. It's just, oh, I think this is a worthy thing to look into, you know? And so therefore it's indicative of my perspective. It shows how I think despite me giving you some laundry list of like, then she hurt me and then I left her and then I got her back, you know? But that's cool too. I mean, I have plenty of those songs.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. But I feel like that's, like, I just want there to be like an offering when we kind of go to those places of like if it does feel simply like you're airing your dirty laundry because it's sensational or because it's gossipy, that can be very like addictive or very like that can really draw someone in. Like, whoa, have you heard like this is going on in someone's private life that we otherwise didn't have access to? But that's not what I want to. That's not why I want to talk
clickbait about
personal things. Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a lot of songs that are clickbaity, and they work. Yeah.
If you call that working.
Yeah, but I want, like, I think there's a difference between like sending, like making an announcement of heartbreak or loneliness or loss or whatever, but then offering something along with it. Like, I find that like when Jason Isbell talks about heartbreak, I find myself feeling better. I feel like he has an attitude towards it that makes it feel like worth listening to. Like, I want to hear this because it's making me like stronger. And then there's other people where I listen to them like, this makes me so sad, it makes me want to cry, and I don't know if I want to listen to it again. Because like, I don't know why
it's hard to take.
Yeah. And maybe that sometimes that's the catharsis, but I sometimes struggle with like knowing like, why am I here with this song? What is it doing for me? And do I like that? Sometimes just emotionally responding for me, not for everybody, isn't enough. Sometimes I'm like, I'm emotionally responding, but maybe I don't appreciate how I'm responding emotionally.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. It's a big deal for us. We actually always wanted to do one of these in stores here at Amoeba. We haven't gotten to do it, so really appreciate you guys coming out. Many of record releases where I've been, where all you guys are standing and seeing some of my favorite bands do this, so it means a lot to us. That last song is called Telescope. It comes off like a song about like a troubled childhood, but it's more of just a shameless attempt at a sync for a telescope commercial or something. So if you know anybody.
Yeah. 8 years goes by, you get better.
Yeah.
And the playing, there is a really precise playing throughout the record.
Yeah.
But on a few songs, you really hear, you guys know, we're playing some chops here.
Yeah.
So it must feel like the band is in a good space now.
Totally. And I mean, that's a funny thing to navigate as well, because I love jazz records. I love Steely Dan. I love Dire Straits, and all that stuff can be very slick. Like later Dire Straits, especially, it's perfect, you know. But perfect in a way that still feels like an accident. Still feels like, oh, they just were doing what they do, and it happens.
They know how to play.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but should they play down to us?
Yeah, exactly. And because I also love Lou Reed solo records where it's scrappy and things are out of tune, and like it's a little wild. And
with the exception of Metal Machine Music,
I hope. I've read about that record,
don't,
and I feel like I've
listened. Don't buy it. Save your money.
Yeah, I'm not gonna buy.
Just my opinion.
But yeah, like I love how scrappy that is as well. Like but it's funny. Like I'll talk to certain friends about. Like I feel like our relationship with scrappiness can kind of be summed up in my love of replacement, starting with Don't Tell a Soul.
Right.
How like I didn't get it until I heard Don't Tell a Soul, and then I was like, oh, I love this band, and then I like really loved everything. But there's this punk attitude that regretfully actually never experienced. Like I never identified with it. So
it's never too late.
Right. Yeah. Maybe that'll be the next record.
Yeah. But you know, you're at a point where now you can decide.
Yeah.
We're just gonna be a garage band. Damn it all.
But it's weird because it's like you said, like you can't help how you play. Like right. and we I don't think I'm a particular like the best guitar player by any means, but I know what ends up being fun when we're all interacting, and the other guys are so deeply committed to their instruments, and you know we'll be in the van on the way to the airport, and they're discussing like the last 2 minutes of a Keith Jarrett track from the mid 70s that no one's really heard of, and it's pretty extensive how deep these dudes go. I'm always the one showing them like acoustic songs of guys that can barely sing that have 8 minute like songs with a bunch of lyrics, because I'm like, how great is this? And they're like, cool, you keep listening to that and we'll keep listening to this.
30 verses in this. Yeah, I love this song.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like the marriage. And also like that, we try to be very mindful of that. When I bring a song in, whether it's like Feed the Fire or Time Flies Either Way or a lot of this record, Telescope, like I'll just kind of say, here's what I have. I don't know what it's supposed to sound like. And then they'll play it. And
how much room is there for the lyrics? Because you do have to accommodate.
Yeah.
You know, they got to coexist.
And that's the amazing thing about those three dudes, is that they have such a deep respect for the sanctity of song. Like it never becomes the drum show or the keyboard show. It's like, oh, that's a great song or that's a song that we like. So we're going to do this in the intro, and then we're going to turn it back down to three, and then we're going to let you sing. And, you know, there's a real unspoken understanding and a respect for like what we're all trying to do. But I, you know, with other bands or other artists, like, you know, even singer songwriters, because they're paying for the studio time. It's all on them. So if they come in and say, I need you to play this, or I need you to play that, that's fine. It's their name on the record. But with this, it's Dawes. It's not me. So like what I get out of singing these songs and writing these songs, that feeling of being represented and feeling expressed, that has to exist for Griffin on drums, and that has to happen for Wiley on bass and for Lee on keyboards. Like they have to get that same thrill of feeling like I am sending my identity out into the world through the instrument that I play, and Taylor is not coming in here saying I need it to be like this and treating all of them as like the next set of hands for me to do exactly what I want. So it ends up creating a real cool environment of discovery. We don't know how these songs are going to sound. I just play them what I have. Some songs will be more obvious, like what the treatment should be, like Living in the Future. It's like, right. Yeah, it's a big guitar riff. Let's play it like that. And then other songs just surprise us. And we have no idea what it's going to be until they kind of have all decided, like, here's what I want to do. And that will... That, you know, that's one of those things where it like widens the spectrum of like we can really disappoint ourselves and be like, wow, this song that we thought was going to be a single is just not even going to be on the record. But it can also be, it can also do the opposite of that, where it feels like this song that I didn't think was any good is now our favorite. So it's really fun trusting each other in those ways.
Give our shared mistakes.
How's everybody doing? We're good with two more? We can do that together? Cool. Also, the record comes out tomorrow, but it's for sale today, so no excuses. Song's about getting married.
We were joking earlier when you're getting ready, you're doing sound check for the performance at Amoeba, how it's in such early stages, the live performance aspect of some of these songs, that you're still finding out what is the live performance of these songs. So they are going to continue to evolve.
Oh, yeah.
And they probably will evolve.
Yeah.
I mean, what shall I say, Dylan? And then look at how many songs
iterations
have taken on so much of a new life.
Yeah, I want to do more of that. We don't do enough of that.
Well, listen, again, quit race. You're not, there's no race here. You know, you're doing fine. You're making records. You're writing good songs. You're touring. Oh, yeah, that. You worked with Jonathan, longtime friend and partner in crime. He went out with Lucius, who you had on the new record, Yeah. They went out with Roger Waters.
Yeah, they're all together now.
And you're about to go out. You're going to do kind of two variations of a touring. You're going to do some shows as Dawes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're planning on two, I guess, different sets.
Yeah, just our evening with shows where we'll play for, like, it'll be like a three-hour show, no opener, that kind of thing. We'll get to explore the whole catalog. And those are the most fun, yeah.
And then there's the other tour you're going on, which I would imagine that Jonathan and Holly and Jess gave you some insight into playing a big... Because the context of playing with Jeff Lynne's ELO,
yeah.
It's gonna that be big, guy yeah. goes big.
Yeah.
I don't know if you
it's
know
the
that.
It's the first tour that we've ever been asked to come a day early for a production rehearsal, like as an opening band, because I think Changeover is going to be... a different thing than it's ever been before. So I'm looking for, I have no idea what to expect, and I really can't wait. I mean, the cool thing about that as well is, you know, we've always loved ELO because we've always loved
who can
yeah. And if you're aware of Tom Petty or George Harrison or Roy Orbison's later stuff or Wilburys, then you're aware of Jeff Lynne, even if you don't realize it. And then you listen to like their 20 most famous songs, and then you realize you know every single one of them. But even beyond that, we were deep fans. We always have been. But then we, you know how it is with all artists. You stop, you listen to the Beatles for another 2 months, and then you don't listen to the Beatles for another 2 years. And then you go back. And so we hadn't listened to the ELO in a while.
I'm in radio, you know.
You always listen to the Beatles.
I hear the Beatles
yeah,
every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
That's just how it works. People actually ask us sometimes on the one show, the 60s at 60, do you need to play the Beatles? It's like... How do I avoid the 1,000 great songs they wrote in the 60s? I'm going to penalize them now.
But like we hadn't gone back to ELO in a while, and for some reason, right when we started making Passwords, it kind of came back into our zeitgeist at the studio where we just were talking about it a lot. We were exchanging tips on records and songs and just revisiting stuff that we had heard and that we hadn't heard, and it found its way into being a big inspiration for this record. So, and then like, you know, listening to it, we're like, oh, there's some ELO vibes here. And this was long before we thought that this could be a tour opportunity. So then when we found out that we were submitted to go tour with them, and they asked us to come, we couldn't believe it. They haven't toured in 35 years. So we thought it wasn't even a dream we could have thought of having, because it just didn't seem like it was something that could ever be on the table.
I endorse Jeff Lynne as a possible future producer of Dawes, because you mentioned...
Yeah, he's
great. An aside, for those who don't know, do you know that Full Moon Fever was rejected by the label as not being a good record? And I got given a cassette by a certain someone, and he said, do you think this is good? I said, who the hell is telling you this ain't a great record? Anyway,
wow.
I've always thought that Jeff Lynne should produce everybody. So that's my two cents. The new album coming out, it is an album. Fittingly enough, we are in Amoeba Records. I'm a Luddite. I want people to buy. You make albums, right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong about assuming that you just don't get a bunch of songs and they...
No, I mean, in this one more than ever, I feel like, you know, there's certain things that I think about that I think, outside of like the band and you, it might not really occur to anybody, but it still matters to me. Like the idea that it was important to us that the record started, at least maybe not tracks one and two, but in the first half, that we had songs like Living in the Future and Stay Down, because they represented some sort of anxiety or some sort of darker attitude. And then it was important that by the end of the record, we landed on Never Gonna Say Goodbye and Time Flies Either Way, because I feel like it takes those attitudes and finds a way to kind of like work through it, through, you know, what the rest of the record is about.
It goes from the isolation.
Yeah.
That certainly digital existence can lead to, you know what?
Yeah.
Interpersonal still is going to happen whether you hide or not. You can isolate all you want. It's going to get to you some way.
Yeah. And devoting yourself to that. Like in my case, like this meeting of this modern world with and the neurosis that goes along with that, while at the same time falling in love with somebody and getting engaged, like those two things are kind of happening side by side on this record. And I feel like by the last song specifically, Time Flies Either Way, it's sort of this this like reconciling of the two. Like
I thought you were going to use the word marriage.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but watch it, because then now it's clickbait.
Yeah.
See, so we gotta just, you know, we'll edit that out.
But it is this marriage of these two ideas where me feeling more comfortable with knowing how to get through this time of this constant low grade anxiety is wrapped up in a connection with someone else, and the more I devote to like living for that, living for love, as old fashioned as that sounds, brings more peace into my life than I could have imagined there being otherwise.
This is our last song. Thank you so much for being here. We're gonna hang out with some of you afterwards and say hello. We're gonna be playing a whole lot the rest of this year, so please let's get together and hang out as much as possible.
Trying to feed the fire.
Thank you all so much. It's a pleasure hanging out with you guys. Thanks for letting us have our first day of these new songs with all you guys. It means the world to us.
Well, we would expect nothing less but you seeking the truth and wanting to make sure that you're doing it for an authentic purpose. That's what makes Taylor Goldsmith one of our great songwriters of our time. That's what makes Dawes one of our great bands of our time. And that's what makes the album Passwords, not just the random listening to this song or that song, but the album Passwords. We're here at Amoeba. It will be available there. It's available. You can order it online. Yes, you can listen through any platform you want. Please, I extol our listeners. However you consume Dawes music, make sure that a few pennies somehow find their way to the band. That's all I ask.
Come to the show. Come to the show.
And come to the shows because now there's Dawes an evening with, and there's the big spectacle. So you're giving people a lot of options.
Yeah, yes.
Well, God bless you. Always fun, as I've said, and I will continue to say every time we see each other, the purpose of 88.5 FM remains. When you headline the forum, when, not if, I announce my retirement because my work here will be done. So on one end, I want you to get there right away. But then if you get there, then I got to retire. Yeah. So it's with mixed emotions.
Yeah, we'll take our time.
I continue to have that as a set purpose for the radio station and wouldn't mind if you got there sooner than later because I'm old as hell. It's Taylor Goldsmith, it's Dawes, and it's Passwords on 88.5 FM. Thanks,
buddy. Right on, man. Thanks for having me.
You got it.